Welcome to the Day Zero update for March 22nd, 2015. I'm Filippo DeNolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And Teresa is not here with us today.
She may be joining us later on in the show, but there were just some scheduling conflicts, which it tends to happen when you have,
children.
That and a lot of people working together on a show, but but hopefully she'll be joining us later on because there are a couple news items here that I'm really hoping to hear her two cents on. But before any of that, Phil, what have you been playing?
Been playing quite a bit this week. I've got Defense Grid 2, obviously still playing that. Dead or Alive 5 last round. I've been playing some more of that. I managed to actually find one ranked match, so that's progress, I suppose.
You're on the board.
Yeah, just one. Yeah.
That's on the board.
That's a thing. Been playing Axiom Verge, which I still can't talk about until after next week's show, which is really annoying. Let's see what else. So yeah, Ollie 2, Welcome to Ollywood. That game is fantastic. If you don't have it on your PlayStation Plus account, definitely need to pick that one up while it's still free. It's a nice little two-dimensional, very stylish skateboarding game. Kind of reminds me of what Tony Hawk used to be before it got stupid.
See, I was about to ask if it was kind of a skate-or-die type thing.
No, it's more like just you've got a run to complete, and that's pretty much all you do. And it's got a nice, simple to get into skill system, but it works really well.
Cool.
And I've also been playing Jamestown Plus on the PS4, which is pretty darn fantastic, really. If you like vertical scrolling shooters set in the Spanish Martian War, you're probably well served with this one.
Oh, okay then. Sounds interesting enough.
Yeah, well, it might sound like I'm making light of it, but it's actually a really well-done game. The art is excellent. The soundtrack is excellent. Four-player co-op. It's a really well-done game. So.
Cool.
Yeah. How about yourself?
I'm still on Ridge Racers 2, I promise. Been dragging my feet kind of getting some of the videos up on my YouTube channel, but I'm hoping I will complete that in the next couple weeks. I really love the quality of footage that's been coming out with the PlayStation TV and my capture card. Really shows off the game well. I've started Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, but I can't really talk a whole lot about it at the moment because by started, I mean I've created a character and have done approximately 2 missions.
Yeah.
And so I have barely dipped a foot in the water, but it's going pretty well so far, and I can definitely see why the series has all the fans it has. Mm-hmm. My big addiction right now is Final Fantasy Type-0. Came out this week. I've been playing that for the review. I've also been playing the Final Fantasy 15 demo that comes with it. And I'll be talking about that here in a moment.
Yeah.
But no, Type-0 is a fantastic game. It really blends some action RPG elements with very traditional Final Fantasy elements of its own. And, word is out, obviously, that the ending hints at Type-1 finally being made.
Yeah.
So,
I'm curious, did they actually change the ending?
That's what I gather.
Hmm.
I did not play the PSP version all the way through, but from what various websites are saying, yes, they did change the ending to imply Type-1 to basically act as an announcement of Type-1.
Hmm. Yeah, so they were really betting that the HD remaster of Type-0 was going to do well.
Yeah. Hmm. Which, when you include the Final Fantasy 15 demo, there was probably no way it wasn't going to do well.
Yeah.
But no, Hajime Tabata has a really good thing going with Type-0, and apparently with Type-1 coming. So I it's something I fully welcome. We need more of this. And, you know, it's another sign that Square Enix is getting stronger again.
Mm-hmm.
After such a long time. So, Brandon, what have you been playing?
I'm still sort of pecking away at Remember Me, about midway through that, I think. Also started Far Cry 4, the other day, which I have been enjoying. You know, I mean, they are right. It is basically Far Cry 3 in the Himalayas, but
with a way more interesting antagonist, from what I gather.
Yeah. Mostly because they basically took, you know, probably the most interesting character that was in Far Cry 3, of course, was Voss. And, of course, he ends up, like, dying, like, in the halfway through the game or whatever. But, in this case, they've got the antagonists basically with all the craziness and charisma of Voss, but he is the main guy.
Yeah.
It still kind of throws me off that, you know, this guy is basically just some American tourist who gets thrown into the middle of the Himalayas, and then suddenly he's a super awesome gorilla.
Did you do the fast ending?
I've already seen the fast ending, so. Yeah,
so.
Did they ever find that other hidden ending that that the developers implied shortly before it was released? So I know there was another secret ending.
No, I don't think they've come across that one yet. I haven't heard anything about it, at least.
But, Pagan Man is a freaking incredible villain. It's really fun, because if you look at the game really closely, you can see it's actually very heavily inspired by the Maoist insurgency in Nepal right now. And, you know, it's interesting. Of course, you know, obviously my favorite thing about Far Cry 3 and this one too is being able to take over the outposts. I don't know why. It's just, you know, I'm a sucker for revolution stories. So, and if it involves guerrilla warfare, even better.
Yeah.
But also, I've been playing Five Nights at Freddy's 3. And when I say playing Five Nights at Freddy's 3, I mean I'm hidden safely under the covers while tentatively pecking at the keyboard, because these games are almost designed to scare the shit out of me. You know, first of all, animatronics creep me the hell out, and, you know, that's the reason I can't go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, I mean, anyone who still is able to probably had it squoze out of them by this series.
Yeah. And the thing is, here's the thing. People who play Five Nights, you can usually tell the difference between who it is that plays Five Nights in Freddy's and who says they play it but really haven't. And it's usually the ones who say it's all jump scares. And those people are lying pants on fire, because it's not the jump scares that get you. It's the incredible sense of dread that these games give you. Because if Scott Cawthorn is good at one thing, it's being able to give you just this this ensuing amount of doom where you're at a point where it's like, screw it, just show up and kill me already. And he's been able to make that sense of doom increasingly more and more,
pronounced
as the series has worn on. You know, like in the first Five Nights at Freddy's, it was just simplistic in its perfection in its simplicity. And, it was just the, 'cause you remember the whole thing with the first one is, you know, even though they move the animatronics themselves, you know, Freddy and company move around, you never actually see them move around. They act sort of like the, you know, the weeping angels from Doctor Who, where as soon as you get your eyes on them, they just stand directly, they just stand perfectly still, you know, until they finally get you. With the exception of, you know, Foxy the Pirate, he's the only one you can actually see running down the hallway. Mm-hmm. And it's really freaking scary, too, because you'll just be sitting there and all of a sudden you'll hear, it's like, motherfucker! But here's the thing. Five Nights at Freddy's 3 is a little different. For one thing, Five Nights at Freddy's 3 has only one actual animatronic in the game. But here's the thing. This one, you can actually see move. He'll still do the they call him Springtrap, and he's sort of like an amalgamation of all the different ones, like all put together, because in this particular Five Nights at Freddy's game, the whole idea is that, you know, the whole Freddy Fazbear's Pizza thing is, you know, the whole franchise is dead, but they've made this thing into like a spook, into like a dark ride or a spook house. So you're basically acting as a security guard for like a carnival attraction. And the thing is, though, there's this weird thing where one of the things you have to do is you have to keep the ventilation clear, because if you don't, I'm not sure exactly how this is supposed to work out in the universe of the game, but you'll actually start hallucinating stuff, and like you'll actually start hallucinating the other former animatronics, and if that happens, it'll actually screw with the systems and the alarm will start going on, and that will attract Springtrap. And the thing is, Springtrap will do either the thing where he'll stand perfectly still, but sometimes you can actually see him like slinking around in the background, like really carefully. Sometimes he'll even peek around the door, and it's really unsettling. God, I love that game series. I don't care what anyone says. It's just made to creep me the hell out. But you know what? None of that really matters, because I've also been playing Ori and the Blind Forest. And that game is amazeballs. It is amazing. The first 10 minutes of this game are basically like the first 10 minutes and up. And those of y'all who are listening, you'll know what I mean by that. But, you know, it looks gorgeous. It is a beautiful-looking game. I mean, astonishingly beautiful-looking game. It's a sort of a Metroidvania-type game. You basically play this little sort of cat-like forest spirit named Ori, who is basically, he's trying to, you know what, I can't talk too much about the story without it spoiling too much of it, but needless to say, it's a really fun sort of Metroidvania type game, gameplay wise. The platforming's really good, and, it's, you know, controlling him is, or he is very intuitive. My one beef with the game is the fact that, you do have the ability to make your own save points in the game, but it costs resources. So you're limited to the amount of saves that you can create.
Reminds me of the original localization of Lunar Eternal Blue.
Yeah, it's not a problem most of the time, but there are some parts where it can be a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But other than that, I highly recommend it. Yeah. And last I checked, it's only like $20, so...
Yeah, it's Xbox One, and it's also on Steam, I think.
Yep. So, Ori and the Blind Forest, give it a try. It's great. You will feel. You will feel and you will weep like a little girl. It just... But that's all I did, so...
Yeah. Pretty busy week. So you want to talk about the demo now?
Yeah, I want to talk about the demo. Okay. We've been through Final Fantasy demos before. Generally, we know what we're getting and what we're not getting from them. I'm really hoping that this demo is selling Final Fantasy 15 really short. Because it, you know, there have been divisive entries in the series before, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
8. 12.
Oh, yeah.
15. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you can take all of those games that divided the community up, and, like, the most divisive question you could ask about them is, how well, if at all, does it represent the Final Fantasy series? With Final Fantasy XV, at least as it is presented in the demo, you can't even really get a definitive answer as to whether it qualifies as an RPG. Or even an action RPG, for that matter. It feels like a sort of, kind of like a bad character action game with a few RPG elements ham-fisted into it. And then a couple of thematic inclusions just to try and justify the Final Fantasy name. I don't know.
I mean, when it started out, you know, this wasn't supposed to be a normal Final Fantasy game. It was one of the spinoffs.
It was Versus 13, and, you know, it was a spinoff of Final Fantasy 13, just like Type Zero. And, mm-hmm. you know, for its part, Type Zero holds pretty fast to that that tie-in. It uses a lot of the same terminology as Final Fantasy 13. With Final Fantasy 15, even if you want to call it an action RPG, it's not a very good one because there are so many problems with it that genre got past long ago. The camera is horrific. The target lock system is almost useless. It does nothing to use what should be a RPG genre standing to avoid some of the design pitfalls that the game falls into just because it's taking the series into uncharted territory and they aren't entirely sure how to handle certain aspects in the battle system that they've never had to answer before. Once you get down to 0 hit points, it's not game over. You just enter a sort of weakened state where you can't attack or defend. And any damage that you sustain will get taken out of your maximum hit points until you get to a rest point. The problem with that is if your party got split up or if you're just in an unfortunate position in the environment relative to the enemy, you'll just get beaten down until the inevitable defeat. It just... So if it's an action game, it's not a very good one, and you're fighting against the camera and the controls and the target lock and everything far too much for it to be relaxing enough to qualify as an RPG, so I'm really not sure how to classify it at this point. But I can tell you straight up, I certainly can't picture putting up with this for 40 to 60 hours.
Yeah.
That being said, it's not all bad. Once you get into the cave, you have a much better idea of what you're doing and can navigate the battles pretty well to avoid some of the problems that I'm talking about now. But, and then the battle theme when you're in the cave is magnificent. I mean, it's really the only the only track in the demo that I can imagine having on my Zune at some point, listening to it at work or something. But this doesn't really seem like the kind of game that I'll just kick back, grab a cup of coffee, sit down and unwind to for a few hours after work someday. This is more the kind of game that you pick up when you want something really up tempo, really actiony.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it doesn't do a very good job of justifying the Final Fantasy branding, which is not unprecedented for the series. But I've just never seen an example this egregious, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I have heard that after the demo release, they're supposed to do a hell of a lot of refactoring to the game. So I don't know if that's going to change anything, if we're going to be able to fix a lot of those issues.
I'm hoping. I want this to be a good game. Hmm. I really am. Square Enix needs victories right now.
Hmm.
And I hate to say it, but if the game that they ship, whether it's this holiday season, next spring, whenever it comes out, the game that they ship, if it's anything like what we're playing in the demo that came with Type Zero, this is not going to be a victory for them.
Yeah. Pardon me. Is this the first demo that they've done in a while, isn't it?
13 had one.
13 had one? Okay. Part of me wonders if they're putting it out this early to get some of that feedback, to kind of steer the game back where it needs to go.
And another thing to keep in mind is that Square Enix spent the better part of the sixth and seventh generations. I've almost called them a self-loathing company for no good reason. They've kind of disowned traditional JRPGs in the, eternal hunt for the global market that doesn't really exist. And thankfully, now Yosuke Matsuda, the new head of the company, knows that that was a farce. But Final Fantasy XV is just kind of a leftover from that era.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was in development, it was all in trying to capture that global audience. And that's what I kind of trace some of those action elements to. But I don't know. After playing the demo, I can't really call it a relic of that era so much as a microcosm of it.
Hmm.
And that is something that could end up being absolutely disastrous for them if they really stay the course.
Yeah.
So,
well, hopefully they get enough feedback from, players like you and everybody else who buys Type Zero.
Yeah. Well, the only problem I have with that is that there are too many, this is going to sound downright venomous, but the Final Fantasy fandom is full of way too many yes men who will just follow it wherever it goes, regardless of whether it's good, bad, or whatever. They just get hype knowing that, Tetsuya Nomura and, that core team is working on something.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of Nomura-ness to Final Fantasy XV, even though he's no longer on the active development team.
Yeah.
He did do the character designs. He did do a lot of the visual direction, and he did have quite a bit to say in the story and setting. And so I think a lot of the fans are going to get hung up on that and forgive it for its many, many flaws. So I'm not sure how much feedback is going to really change anything just because of the nature of the fan base.
Yeah.
It's really one of the reasons I don't care much for fandoms in general. But
my experience was always that the Final Fantasy fandom was one half yes men and the other half were complete assholes.
I would probably be that last part, in all honesty. But no, I... like, I grew up loving Final Fantasy, and I really, really want it to be great again. And based on the current situation at the company, I'm not looking to Final Fantasy 15 to be the game that solves everything. I'm looking at Final Fantasy 16 to be that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that will be the one that happened on Matsuda's watch.
And that's already in active development, isn't it?
I would be surprised if it wasn't. If I were to guess about who the director would be, I would probably be inclined to say Hiroyuki Ito. Largely because, I mean, that's not just wishful thinking on my part. It's partly because he needs something to do, and it's his turn to make one.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's just the way the company's worked lately.
Yeah.
And so, if they put Hiroyuki Ito to work on a game and tell him, bring it home, make something that will fall right in line with those first 9 games, that's what will fix things at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long, long time since we've had a traditional Final Fantasy game on a proper console, and, you know, without any asterisks attached to it.
Yeah.
And so I really hope that happens, but at the same time, I'm not hoping for Final Fantasy 15 to be a turd either.
No.
Yeah.
So. Hopefully they can get it together and call it a real success story for them. I'm just really skeptical with what I've played so far.
Yep.
So, just had to get that out of my system.
Well, that's a nice thing about this podcast is you can vent.
Yes.
And now for the next couple of hours, we'd like to talk to you about Jesus. Okay, now on to something more positive, Bloodborne.
Yep, that's coming out on Tuesday, and you're looking forward to it, but can't play it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it, my luck. Can't play it, and will play it.
Yeah.
And we'll probably fall down that hole, too.
Freaking God, this is going to be just, it's going to be like Dark Souls all over again. It's just, oh, the anticipation. I got to give From Software credit. They have managed to really take the whole concept of an action RPG that's actually really dark and challenging, and have actually managed to make it a big selling franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, at a time when, you know, for a long time, it seemed like, it's just the fact that, you know, the Souls games just, they don't hold your hand. That's what I love about them. Yep. You know, it's,
Bloodborne seems to be a little differently paced, though.
Yeah, it's a little differently placed, but it looks like it's still going to be extremely challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think what I just meant was, like, while watching the E3 demo of it, I couldn't stop humming the temple theme from Zelda 2.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping that it taps deep into that kind of energy, because that was what I was picking up when they were showing it off.
Yeah, it seems like combat-wise, they're focusing more on offensive combat instead of defensive.
Yeah.
Since, you know, they did away with the shield and instead gave you basically a blunderbuss as your side weapon. And of course, a lot has to be said for this new world they created for it. This really sort of Victorian Gothic aesthetic that they're going for.
Yeah.
With lots of Lovecraftian overtones and everything, and it just looks fucking great.
Yeah, and this is going to be a big one for Sony. I mean, it'll probably make up for the disaster that The Order is turning out to be.
I sure hope.
Well, we know that the lead guy on Demon's Souls and Dark Souls has been leading on this project, so we definitely know it's going to be of good quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing about this game that kind of worries me is the fact that the aesthetic seems to be so dark that it looks like it'd be really difficult to see where you're going.
Hmm. Yeah, I've run into that on some games, and you when they
thankfully most games these days have pretty good gamma correction settings.
Yeah.
Fix that.
Yeah.
Sure. Purists might call that cheating, but I call it making the game playable.
Yeah. And I also got to say, you know, the Souls games and this in reality, I think these are actually some of the best, I would say, survival horror games, because that's really what they are. Yeah. I mean, they're action RPGs, dark fantasy specifically, but they are very much a survival horror type games.
Oh, don't say that. I can actually play these and enjoy them.
Yeah.
It's just that sort of overwhelming sense of dread, and it's the one game that you will never get bored with until you've gotten all the way to the end, because you never know what's coming.
Yeah.
There's the one thing, as I have heard rumors from people saying that one of the things about this game is that it's going to have some parts that are randomly generated.
Yeah.
Which looks like that's going to throw a whole a whole new angle onto the whole Souls formula. Yeah.
I like the implications of it having more staying power because of that, but whenever I hear about anything being randomly generated, I also worry that it's going to be kind of lazy on the developer's part.
Hmm. Well, this is the Souls team we're talking about, so...
I know.
You know, lazy is not something they're known for.
Yeah. But all that I'm getting at is, like, in the barest terms, you could take a random level generator, and it's never going to come up with anything as perfect as World 1-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I tend to get a little bit concerned when I hear about games trading, you know, meticulous handcrafted level design for procedural generation.
Yeah. Although this isn't going, you know, full whole hog in that route. They're kind of doing a hybrid of the two.
That's so good.
Yeah. So that's something else I've, and of course, have you guys seen some of the creature design?
A little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, they're kind yeah. of freaky.
Yeah. New no, stuff to haunt my, yeah. New stuff to haunt my nightmares. If there's one thing these guys are good at, it's coming up with some really fantastic creature design.
Yeah.
Just look at Dark Souls. I mean, that's the standard fantasy, dark fantasy world, and they still managed to come up with some really freaky shit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I also liked in that, in like those games, that they would purposely kill you.
Oh, yeah. They basically let you know you're going to die a lot in yeah, this game. Yeah. And the best part is, it's part of the plot, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, they actually managed to take that and integrate it into the overall scenario.
Yeah.
You know, you are basically, like, this lost soul who's basically doomed to constantly come back over and over again until finally managing to get to the end.
Yeah.
But as Bloodborne's coming out next week,
yeah.
I mean this
sort
week.
Sort of a way of taking the concept of it's impossible to fail and still making it creepy as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looks like you'll have to pick up a PlayStation 4 at some point.
Yeah, apparently.
Dope.
I'll have to... let's see if I can find something on eBay. That won't bankrupt me.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, 27th. I just thought I'd mention a quick mention of Forza Horizon 2 presents Fast and Furious, which is basically a tribute to Paul Walker.
Yeah.
So if you've got an Xbox One, download that. It's going to be free for the first month, so.
A good mix up of the content from the game itself, so.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for something a little bit different, then that should fit the bill.
Yeah, you'll have a nice variety of the cars from the movies as well, so, you know, you'll have all the good stuff to play around with. And
yeah.
I wonder if any of those cars will end up importing into Horizon 2, because that would be pretty nice.
Yeah, that would be really nice. And we should mention that, at least last time I read about it, it was a standalone game that you do not have to have Forza Horizon 2 to play.
Yeah, it's completely standalone as far as I know of right now.
Cool.
Freebies. Gotta love them.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah.
We love free stuff.
Yep.
So, following up on the net neutrality news from a couple weeks ago, it seems that they really were just waiting for news of that to come down before bringing the hard information about PlayStation Vue and Sling TV. We now have our channel lineups, our pricing structures across the board for both services. Right now it looks like PlayStation Vue is going to be more of a straightforward replacement for cable and satellite with a whole mess of channels but priced accordingly. While Sling TV is a little more bare bones, it's just a few channels, but the key inclusion here is ESPN, and it's priced quite reasonably compared to PlayStation Vue.
Yeah, and the Xbox One app for Sling TV is available now, so.
Yeah,
you do get a 30-day trial on that, as opposed to the 7 days you get if you sign up through the website. So, tip, if you want to try it, do it on the Xbox One. You'll get a longer trial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Forgot what I was trying to pull up here. So, But yeah, I think I'm leaning toward PlayStation Vue. It's got NBC Sports Network for my hockey fix, and then if they add Altitude Sports and Entertainment to the kind of Intermountain West version of the $60 tier, then they'll handle all Colorado Avalanche regional coverage. And that's something I would definitely pay $60 a month for.
Yeah. It beats paying, you know, 80 plus for Comcast or whatever your provider happens to be in the area you live in, because there's usually only one.
Yeah. As long as prices for PlayStation Vue don't go completely out of control, this is going to be what keeps cable and satellite providers honest.
Yeah.
I think that in and of itself is going to be worth the cost of admission.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, from that to some slightly sad news, if you're a fan of TXK and were waiting for it on PS4 or Android or PC or any other platform, it ain't coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Atari.
Quote unquote, Atari.
Yeah. We should clarify what this is not Atari, but the zombified remains of Infogrom trying to get the brains of LlamaSoft.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
And apparently they've tried to screw Jeff Minter over before with the release. You know, going back about 20 years to the release of Tempest X3 for the Sega Saturn, Sega Saturn got Tempest 2000, even though it was X3.
Yeah.
PlayStation got X3, which was just different enough that they didn't owe him anything. And I'm just sitting here wondering where Dave Thierer is while all this is going on. And maybe two people got the understood what I was talking about there. It's bullshit. Everyone knows it's bullshit, and hopefully hopefully it doesn't progress far enough to where the cancellation sticks, but Minter sounds pretty pessimistic about it himself. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure someone at whatever's left of Atari will eventually come to their senses and think, hey, wait a minute. We could either get nothing from these game cancellations, or we could work with Jeff and actually make a butt-crap load of money.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tempest will sell. You know.
Yeah. And as somebody who has TXK on the PlayStation Vita and PlayStation TV, it is a fantastic game and should be distributed as far and wide as it possibly can.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this may have fucked it over once and for all.
Yeah, or at least for the foreseeable future.
But I would love to be wrong about that, because the more people who can play this game, the better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll wait with bated breath.
Now for some of the surreal news.
Yeah, we're still in the 90s, apparently, so let's go back to...
recurring theme, by the way.
New Joe Montana football has been announced by Joe Montana himself. Apparently, it's been in the works since last year, so they've been on it.
Yeah. And they're even using Unreal 4, apparently.
Yeah, this is not... a dirty port of the old Joe Montana games on the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
This is a serious attempt at making a football simulation on modern...
Uh-oh. That's not good.
Okay.
There you go.
The connection just kind of had a hiccup.
Yeah, you're saying this is...
That has been happening.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of sleuthing when I... when I found out about this, because it's been a long time since that deal between EA and the NFL kind of made made Madden the only NFL licensed game on the planet. Apparently, they've only got a year or two left on that contract now, and so. Me, I'm personally not all that invested in football in general, football video games. I do enjoy Madden every now and again. I do, I enjoyed NFL 2K every now and again when it was a thing.
Yeah.
But I want to see where this goes. EA's contract with the NFL is winding down. The NFL cares sometimes a little too much how its sport is represented. Mm-hmm. If there was ever a time to start a massive grassroots community effort to curtail a renewal of this exclusivity contract, you might want to start it approximately now.
Yeah.
Because if you can bring it to the NFL's attention that exclusivity is causing EA to present football in video game form anything less than the best it can absolutely be, they will absolutely pay attention to that. If you can make your case you know, thoroughly enough and get enough people on board with it, you can get the NFL to pay attention to something like this, because if anything, they can be really uptight about the most senseless things. This is something that reflects upon their business, reflects upon the sport, and you know it. And it shows them that, you know, maybe there are some other studios out there that can showcase the game better.
Yeah.
That's something that's the kind of thing they always pay attention to.
Yeah. And this coming from Joe Montana is, you know, it's something that the NFL will have to at least look at and not dismiss out of hand, you know, straight away. Like, you know, 2K did try to release an unlicensed football game going head-to-head with Madden, and that didn't really work too well. But they didn't have a name like Montana behind it. And his name still holds some weight, so...
Yeah.
And we both know, I mean, John Madden is going to be around all that long, so...
Wow.
Well, I mean, he's been less and less involved with the game for, you know, year after year. So.
I know. And
yeah, you can tell, too. Because the Madden series has just gotten more and more mediocre.
Yeah.
And if someone brings that to the NFL's attention, then the odds of EA getting another sweet contract like that would be fuck all.
Yeah.
So... And Joe Montana himself is pushing the right buttons with some of these hashtags like more than a roster update.
yeah.
You know, hitting Madden where it hurts, really, with the all too frequent charge that the yearly Madden releases are nothing but a roster update.
Yeah.
Which some years they are and some years they aren't. But this is kind of a perfect storm that may not have been the intended goal of Joe Montana 2016, but you know, this could lead to something pretty monumental.
Yeah, and his timing is,
if he plays its cards right. Yeah.
His timing is excellent too, because if that deal has, you know, a couple of years left, let's say it's a year and it's up for renewal next year, Montana 16 could come out with no license, but still do really well. In the meantime, they have another year to iterate on it, and you know, be in a better place to actually get that NFL license. Maybe not exclusively, but at least have a better shot at it.
Yeah, and you know, maybe have 2K waiting in the wings.
Yeah, because we don't know who's publishing or anything about this at this point. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird RBI situation from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Competition is good. We need that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, football video games were better when there was, you know, a couple of different series you could go for. I mean, you could go for Madden. You could go for NFL Blitz. You could go for, you know, Tecmo Bowl. Or, you know, there was a bunch of different series you could choose from.
Yeah.
And that reminds me, if they do this Joe Montana thing, they need to do one thing. They need to have both Joe Montana and Bo Jackson in there as hidden characters. make all their stats like super super overpowered.
Thing.
Yeah. They'll probably have a Legends roster in there with Montana and Rice and Bo Jackson and all the people you remember from the 80s and 90s that were,
Although I think the default rosters would be the legendary rosters, but just minus the ridiculous stats.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the loophole they seem to be playing on, is the NFL exclusivity deal that EA has only applies to current players.
Yeah, that's true.
So, just a little food for thought there.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, Bo Jackson would be the one thing where the overblown stats would actually be justifiable. Considering the fact that this is the only man to be in both the football and baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I've seen, there are like YouTube videos about how ridiculous he was in Tecmo Bowl.
They called
him Tecmo Bo.
Yeah. Just get the ball to him and it goes into the end zone. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
Or you just have him run a few laps around the field first.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually do that with him.
Yeah, you could.
Ridiculous.
So, I'm all for this. I'm not a football fan or anything, but I like competition where
it's a story that we'll be following.
So, yeah. Another story we're going to be following is Hideo Kojima apparently leaving Konami.
Yeah. He's not escalated out of nowhere.
Yeah. Now, he's not leaving the video game business. He's just leaving Konami, the company.
Yeah.
I don't think there was much confusion about that fact.
Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is because it's well known that Hideo Kojima, his passion is film, and you know, I've always thought that he should get a shot at doing a film, but you know, he's staying with video games for the time being, and it looks like maybe either he wants to go maybe freelance, or maybe he's going to go independent and start his own company.
Yeah.
I imagine he'll always have Koji Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he certainly has the clout and the talent to back it up. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I think is going to happen. You're going to have Sony give Kojima a whole boatload of money to make an exclusive virtual reality film for Morpheus.
Ooh.
I think my pants just got a little tighter. that is something made for him.
Yeah.
That would just be, if anybody can take, you know, the new VR stuff and just make it just unbelievable, it's him.
Yeah.
Because he is the one guy of all the people in the game business, he is the one guy who's been able to give this sense of mind-bending, fourth wall breaking, and reality slowly collapsing in on itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
In his games. That sounds like a perfect idea. This also does bring up the question about what's going on with Silent Hills, though.
Yeah, and that's where I was going. He says he's all in on Metal Gear Solid 5, despite the apparent removal of Koji Pro branding from that game. He's not saying nobody's saying anything about Silent Hills right now, which kind of brings forth some questions about that game. And Konami, for their part, have already started putting out job announcements looking for his successors.
Yeah.
So they're pretty much already getting the Metal Gear Solid 6 team together,
yeah.
even before Kojima has cleaned out his office.
Yeah, that is going to be some pretty big shoes to fill.
Yeah,
because I mean he is one of the defining auteurs of the video game world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know you were playing a Kojima game.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't have his name on it.
Nope. We haven't seen the last of him. I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Kojima Productions as a brand itself.
The way this kind of escalated over the last few days makes it clear that all is not well within Konami right now. Because in the best case scenario, he would have just kind of quietly left after the release of Metal Gear Solid 5, and they would have just come up with some kind of update as far as Silent Hills goes.
Yeah.
This just all kind of came out of nowhere. Something happened behind closed doors is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, Konami as a company has been struggling for the past few years. They're not quite as bad as Capcom is at this point. But, yeah, they've got issues. And I actually wouldn't be surprised to see those two companies merge in the next couple of years.
That would be weird. It has the potential to be the douchiest thing that ever happened. But, I don't know. I just think their products are a little too different to fit well together under the same banner, but I felt the same way about Eidos and Square Enix too. So,
yeah. Nintendo had some news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just out of nowhere, they randomly make the announcement that they're partnering with an established Japanese mobile developer, DNA, to start producing some mobile games based on Nintendo IPs.
Yeah, this could be kind of interesting because it could go a lot of ways. Yeah, they could go the freemium route, which I think pretty much everybody would absolutely hate.
Yeah.
But what I got from the interview that Iwata gave is that he's not too interested in doing pay gates like that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, he wants to go for whatever whatever feels like it's going to be best for consumers and best for the player base.
Mm-hmm.
He had a really good talk with Time Magazine where he just laid everything out about that, and we'll be linking to that in the show notes. But this is not something that they're doing kind of half-assed or by the seat of the pants. They're really, they're thinking before every step they take on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, both companies are mutually invested. I mean, Nintendo bought, I think, 40% of DNA, and DNA's got like 2% of Nintendo, so it, yeah, it behooves both of them to do this properly.
Yeah.
This is actually kind of similar. This is actually sort of Nintendo's whole MO is people wonder, you know, why did it take them so long to get into mobile? But Nintendo tends to let the technology mature a little bit before they get in on it. You know, because that's sort of like their whole modus operandi is, you know, that's what they call, I forgot what it is they call, but the basic concept is, you know, they let a technology, any new technology, let it sort of stew in the ether for a while before they, so they can find out all the
assets stuff and that's, flaws.
Yeah.
I just call it no rules but Nintendo rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of how they always function. No, they take a lot of shit for it, but at the end of the day, it works out for them.
Yeah.
So well, I mean,
these are going to be original games. They're not going to be, you know, shovelware ports of, you know, whatever. Even though everybody probably wants a Bluetooth controller that you can snap to your phone and a way to download Virtual Console games legally.
That would be magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I do think that what we're going to end up seeing in the long run is that mobile will get the gateway games. Maybe not bare bones versions, but definitely less than the main product.
Probably something akin. Sorry,
I was just going to say to hook new audiences into getting the full experience on Nintendo platforms. Which is really the best way for Nintendo to invest in mobile if they want to use it as an asset to sustain their own platforms rather than just moving everything toward mobile. Yeah.
Just be careful and don't end up doing what Ubisoft did. And
I think those are wise words in just about any context.
Yeah. Just don't do what Ubisoft did.
Yeah.
But, because, like, I guess you guys know about how they had the app that they integrated into Assassin's Creed Unity.
Oh, yeah, that was just one of Assassin's Creed Unity's problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it ties into a more far-reaching rule of don't buy you Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that wasn't all that Nintendo had to announce.
In passing, they made it clear that they're committed to fostering their own platforms by passingly announcing that the Wii U successor, now called or codenamed the Nintendo NX, is a thing. There's not going to be any new info this year. They're just establishing that it exists. It's in R&D, and you'll hear more about it next year, which I would say pencil it in for E3 and the launch for 2017.
And I honestly don't think we'll really get the whole picture at least until 2017, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, we might get when they were doing, because remember when they were bringing out the Wii, it took them a long time before they finally showed off the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we went through like two or three E3s without, you know, I mean, just that one year we got, all they showed was the controller, the Wiimote.
Because they didn't have anything to show for the Wii.
Yeah.
Right.
And that is something that we'll be covering on our upcoming Rules of E3 special.
Yeah.
This is one of the rules. We'll just say that much right now. And of course, the fact that it's so far off isn't stopping EB Australia from taking pre-orders, which
is... this is a nice little revenue stream for EB Australia. They'll take pre-orders for something that's at least 2 years out.
So that everybody have no idea what it is.
No idea what it is. So everybody forgets that they actually pre-ordered it, and then they'll go and they'll pre-order it again.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's going to happen is that these people are pre-ordering it right now thinking that they're going to guarantee themselves a system on day one. E3 2017 rolls around and the pre-orders for the product begin in earnest, and the company forgets these pre-orders that they're taking now, and the people who bought them are shit out of luck.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to go.
That's probably how it's going to go. So you want to speculate a little bit on what this new hardware could be and what it might do?
Knowing Nintendo, probably not. But I do think that it's pretty obvious that it's going to involve that controller that Miyamoto said they were waiting on for a new F-Zero game.
Yeah.
Cool. They did mention an entirely new concept, which makes us wonder a few things. Could it be a hybrid platform where the console and the handheld are sort of the same thing? I don't think that would be a brilliant idea because it would be kind of fucking with all the momentum the 3DS has at the moment.
Yeah. Although but this is at least two years out. So.
I was going to say a lot can happen over that period of time.
Yeah.
You never know with Nintendo.
Yeah.
Here's
what I see happening, though. My just wild random speculation is that this is what AMD was talking about a few months ago when in their earnings call. They've been working on custom chips for Nintendo. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be x86 based. But now they're also going to have a far more powerful architecture that they can draw on. So I think they're actually going to come out, you know, in terms of power, they're probably going to come out on top of the PS4. And I think the primary interface will be VR.
Really?
Yeah.
Ow.
Okay, I got to ask. I've got to ask how you come to that one, because I don't think there's a out of any of the big three. I don't think anyone's more invested in several players gaming together on a single screen than Nintendo.
Yeah. So. But that's the thing that didn't work with the Wii U. I think they're going back to the drawing boards with this one, and I believe that if somebody really wants VR to take off, it has to be the main way that you interface with that platform.
Imagine a Mario game that was in VR. Not like you were like it, not like a first person Mario game, but like now you can see Mario, but get this, you can actually have like 360 degree vision. You can look up. You can look down. You can look to the side.
This is just my wild pie in the sky speculation, but you know, could happen.
I should probably leave this particular bit of horror in the fridge, but if F-Zero is going to be the sort of main title that, well, one of the main titles that this platform is going to be setting itself apart with, I really don't want it to be VR.
Well, you say that, but that's without ever having seen it done right.
Yeah. Well, it's not that it wouldn't be done right.
I have seen VR Sonic the Hedgehog, and that's enough to scare me out of it.
Yeah, but that was just cruel and unusual punishment.
And F-Zero wouldn't be? Especially if it's cut from the same cloth as GX.
Yeah, well, the difference there is, you know, Sonic is not a game that's really meant for a three-dimensional perspective. They've tried it over and over again, but F-Zero, you put yourself in the cockpit of one of the, you know, hovercrafts, you could have something pretty good.
It's still projectile vomit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Hell, I mean, you know, in 50 to 60 years, there's going to be, you know, actual organized racing leagues for this, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
You know, that's Studio Liverpool.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That bit of frightening speculation.
Yeah, if that's really what Nintendo's got in the pipeline, they're going to have to build a barf bag onto it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interchangeable just comes with
that. Oh, yeah. Just get your replacements at GameStop or Best Buy, whatever.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. I guess that brings us to our question of the week.
So what do you want? What do you guys want from Nintendo's mobile games?
I have an idea. Get intelligent systems on board, get them to make a mobile strategy RPG, something akin to Terra Battle, where not necessarily the same like format with just like static imagery, but something akin to that as far as gameplay is concerned. Something where you can, you know, arrange your characters in formation, build up stats, get new characters, you know, something like that. It doesn't have to be necessarily in the Fire Emblem franchise. It can be a whole different franchise. But it can also be a Fire Emblem game, too, if they wanted it to be.
Yeah. You know, now that I think about it...
Fire Emblem would be a great game for them to lead with.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was about to say, now that I think about it, Nintendo moving into mobile really isn't that far of a stretch.
Well, that's why people have been clamoring for it for so long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been working with they've been working with touchscreen accelerometers, gyroscopes for years. This isn't anything new to them.
It goes back all the way back to Wii R&D.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The only thing that kind of made it a non-starter was how deeply tied it was to the kind of doom and gloom Nintendo needs to get out of hardware to kind of talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption being that they would have to go to mobile as a way of abandoning their handheld platforms, which is probably the most laughable thing I've heard about Nintendo handheld platforms in a long time. But, some of these idiots out there just can't possibly find anything compelling or interesting in the gaming industry unless somebody's threatened of going the way of the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite bit of speculation was that Apple ought to buy Nintendo.
That's just not going to happen.
No.
Nope.
If any company would actually buy Nintendo and Nintendo would actually agree to sell...
Also not going to happen.
Well, not going to happen, but if it were to happen, it'd be Disney.
Yeah. And then I think the world would collectively cringe.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, really, Nintendo has always styled themselves off of Disney.
Yeah.
So, it would kind of make sense.
And they are going into more multimedia.
Yep.
So... imagine a Nintendo area at Walt Disney World.
Yeah. I think that's
it. Just let that stew for a second.
Yeah. Well, sounds to me like that's pretty much all we got to talk about for the week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll consider that a show.
It was a good show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I'm Filippo Genofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Update complete.